Welcome to Hands That Heal, a compilation podcast of educational segments and interviews for Clear Passage Physical Therapy. In this episode, Larry and Belinda Warren are interviewed by Marcel Pick, host of Core Balance for Women's Health. Today, they will discuss a broad range of health conditions that are caused by adhesions and many times misdiagnosed by the medical community.
What I love about this work is its ability to really help people, in particular with issues around bowel obstructions, because there are people that have huge bowel problems and because of that have something called adhesions in their gut. And when they have adhesions, they sometimes don't move their bowels properly, or they oftentimes have discomfort, especially with coughing or laughing. And it can certainly, you know, I have a number of patients that have such problems with Crohn's disease and they have bowel issues and they have to have surgery and then they get adhesions and they can never get their digestive system to work properly. And then, of course, we always have the problem with infertility, and sometimes people have tubes that are blocked and are not able to get pregnant. And in medicine, we really don't have a great option for that. What we oftentimes will do in that situation is recommend surgery, but the problem is that when surgery is done, the tube oftentimes becomes blocked again. And we have people that have pretty significant pelvic discomfort from either endometriosis or, again, from something called adhesions. If they've had pelvic surgery, they're like, almost look like cobwebs that you see on the wall. If you can imagine tiny fibers in the abdomen, that's what adhesions are. And they can certainly cause people to have great discomfort because the organs can't move freely. And then, of course, we have so many women. I'm always astounded. And how many women in my practice are not enjoying sex and having a lot of sexual discomfort? And one of the things I love also about this concept is that we'll be talking with Larry and Belinda Warrens today from Clear Passage Therapies about, is there something that can be treated? Now, we also know that many times, and we have some great people that are authors at Hay House that talk about this notion of tantric sex and being able to really be in your body and breathing, because that can make a huge difference with some sexual dysfunction as well. But sometimes there's also physical etiology, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to actually introduce Larry and his wife, Belinda, who Belinda is a physical therapist, and Larry is the basically the person who does the director of clinical research there. I'm going to have Belinda tell her story, because that's what's so compelling in terms of what her journey was and why she even became so interested in this whole concept of physical therapy in the way that they do it and how it's able to heal people. So hi, Larry. Larry and Belinda, welcome to the program. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. So, Belinda, would you mind kind of just, not in a very lengthy way, but just kind of let the listeners know about how you became upon this technique and how successful it actually was for you? Because I think there's a lot of people out there that would be very interested to find out a little bit more about the program. So
sure.
Tell me a little bit about what happened, Belinda.
Okay. Well, I've been a physical therapist since 1975, and in 1984, I was diagnosed with cervical cancer, and I had to have surgery and extensive amounts of external radiation therapy, and then two internal radium treatments where I had to lie still with radium pellets implanted the full depth of the uterus for 3 days in a lead-lined room, and I had to have two of those. So the treatment successfully killed the cancer, but it threw me into menopause at age 33, so I was not able to have kids. And then over the next year or two, I started developing intestinal problems, pain, pelvic floor pain, pain with intercourse, and then I started having tailbone, you know, sacrocoxygeal pain and pain in my low back. And we started going to different types of physician specialists. And they really didn't have answers for me. I got answers such as, it's all in your head, or you're going to have to learn to live with it. And that just wasn't acceptable. So that started me and Larry searching for any and every alternative, osteopathic, any kind of potential treatment that sounded like it might be helpful. And so we traveled all over the country studying with many fine physical therapists and osteopathic physicians and being treated. And then we started modifying and refining techniques that we learned from many different people and making up our own. And then you know, I had gotten to the point where I was a chronic pain patient. I basically wasn't able to work as a physical therapist because I couldn't be sitting, standing, or walking for more than about 20 minutes. I'd have such pain, I'd have to get flat on the ground. So Larry continued working on me, and after about a year of this, or no, I guess less than that, finally got me back to the point where I was out of pain and was able to go back to work full-time. So that was when we started our first private practice treating complex chronic pain patients.
So when you started using the technique on yourself, what happened?
Well, my pain symptoms started to get better and then go away, and I was able to become more active and return to all my former activities.
Okay. So let me kind of teach the audience a little bit about this. Is when somebody has radiation, especially pelvic radiation, what happens is the tissue no longer is pliable. So, you know, with intercourse, there's a lot of stretching of the tissue that needs to take place. And when that tissue is no longer pliable, it doesn't move and it causes a tremendous amount of discomfort. So just the concept, and I have several patients that have had, you know, radiation in the pelvis, and it's almost impossible for them to be sexually active. And if they are, it's incredibly painful. And sometimes even with bowel movements, it's very hard. So the whole concept for me, Belinda, that this is no longer an issue is just astounding to me. I mean, that's just very exciting and astounding because what it means is that we have unbelievable potential then to heal and to have the body really heal in an incredible way. So let's talk about this whole notion of why it works and how it works and does it last long term. You know, we in my world, we do a lot of work with women that are trying to get pregnant, and the whole concept, and I just spoke to somebody today that has a large hydrosalpinx, which means she's got a lot of fluid in a fallopian tube and it's not working very well because it's had probably a lot of infection. So it's not, there's no movement in that particular tube. And in medicine, we take the tube out if she's trying to get pregnant. Tell me about some of the successes that you've had with the PT that you do, and also how it works and why it works.
Linda's nodding to me, so I'll go ahead and start on a little bit.
Okay.
If that's okay. Basically, whenever the body heals from a surgery, an infection, a fall onto the tailbone, bladder, yeast infection, endometriosis, tiny adhesions form. There are these little cross links of collagen. They're very strong, like the tiny strands of a nylon rope. They're about 2,000 pounds a square inch. They come rushing into the area to surround the area to start the healing process. Once you've healed, assuming you heal, once you've healed, that's great, but those little adhesions that form, those little cross links that form, very powerful, they stay there. They're the main things that block fallopian tubes. They don't show up on X-rays, MRIs, CT scans. They're sort of a mystery to most of modern medicine. When they form at the end of a fallopian tube, they can cause a hydrosalpinx, cause a swelling, as you said, an infection in the tube that will cause swelling. So what we found was we were treating my dear wife, and she was having such severe pain she couldn't stand in gravity without pain. And we realized that adhesions from the radiation or the surgery or both were causing her problems. So we started figuring out ways to detach these adhesions, detach these little strands, these powerful little straitjackets that were forming, that had formed in some of the most delicate tissues in her body. And that's what we do. And that's so much that we do. That's core to what we do. Some stories hydrosalpinx. We had one when we first started open. We were treating people for women with chronic pain, chronic pelvic pain, not trying to open their tubes, and we started opening women's tubes really as a side effect of therapy. A physician asked us, he said, you know, you've opened tubes in this one and this one that I've referred to you for other things. They had blocked tubes. He said, my wife is 41. She has only one fallopian tube. It's been blocked for 12 years. Do you think you can, and she has endometriosis, a lot of pain. Can you help her? He said, we don't know. It was in the very beginning. We'll give it a try. Belinda actually was the one that treated her exclusively. And she became pregnant at 42 with one tube that had been blocked for 12 years. And after a few of these, we started realizing, whoa, this is pretty cool.
Right.
So that's where, that's kind of how we started on this whole infertility circuit.
Mm-hmm. Well, the part that's so important for me, Larry and Belinda, is that, you know, in the conventional world, the only thing that we recommend for people in that situation is surgery. Right. And for, you know, the problem is that when you do the surgery, then you're creating more adhesions and you're right back to where you started. So here you are now trying to do something to really help open that tube, but now you've created more adhesions, because anytime you do any kind of intervention in the pelvis, you get adhesions that form. It's the body's kind of way of healing. So what I love about this concept is that it's a very natural, if you will, way of helping the body facilitate its healing. And it gives people so much of a possibility of hope that they, you know, didn't have before. And granted, not everybody's going to get pregnant. And it's not going to open every single fallopian tube. But it's certainly statistically significant that it makes a difference. And that means that then people are going to be able to have something that they didn't have before. And even if it doesn't help them get pregnant, it certainly decreases the pain. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. And, you know, adhesions are sort of like internal scarring. Sort of like a spider web that just starts sticking to, you know, any of the surrounding organs. And what we typically see is women who have had their tubes open surgically have about a six-month window within, you know, if they don't get pregnant within that time period, the adhesions from that procedure to open the tubes closes the tube back off.
Right. Right. And the other part that I see a lot of times in my practice also is that a lot of times people with endometriosis have a significant problem too, because what happens with the endometriosis is that they have actual bleeding that occurs outside of that uterus, and that causes the tissue to be very sticky. And then we get, you know, this pelvis that's really immobile.
Right.
So tell me how that works with that.
Well, the work that we do, we feel for where there's restricted mobility of any of the abdominal or pelvic organs. And mm-hmm. we work at sort of like peeling apart tissues and structures that are stuck together that shouldn't be. And when the organs can move more freely, they function better and pain symptoms seem to get better and go away. And mm-hmm. I mean, most of our endo patients also have pain with intercourse. And we found out from our medical director that approximately 60% of women have some, at some point in their lives, have some point pain with intercourse. And, mm-hmm. I mean, we have, I don't know, 90-95% success at totally resolving that and improving all sexual function, improving orgasm, improving lubrication, desire, and...
How do you think that works, Belinda? I mean, you know, I talk a lot of times on the radio show about this whole notion for many women that there's two pieces to the puzzle. There's certainly the emotional piece that actually can affect, you know, sexual dysfunction as well. And then there's the physical piece, which is what you're addressing now. So tell me how that works, on what level that works.
Well, you know, a lot of the work that we do, most of it is external, but the internal, the vaginal work is invaluable because so many, you know, the vagina is open to so many things from the outside, you know, during intercourse, infections, and yeast infections, vaginal infections, bladder infections, and, you know, adhesions form that can start to restrict the mobility of the cervix or the tailbone and bind to, you know, different vaginal parts of the vaginal wall. And mm-hmm. by physically freeing up those adhesions, the tissues become more elastic, so they're able to function, you know, more normally.
Mm-hmm. And how does that affect the libido?
Well, it significantly improves it, you know, if they don't have pain mm-hmm. with intercourse. You know, Larry's the head of our study, so he's waving his hand. He wants to input on this.
Well, go for it, Larry.
I just wanted to mention, because it was cute how it happened. We'd been treating, we started seeing some infertility patients, and this woman called Belinda up, and she said, "Belinda, something to tell you." And she says, "What?" "Well, it's a little embarrassing." Belinda says, "What are you going to tell me?" And she says, "Well, actually, since you treated me, I've come home with my husband. I'm having orgasms like I've never had in my life before."
Mm.
And Belinda being appropriately conservative, said, well, is that okay? That's fine. So we had gotten about, and I'm going to get back to your question about libido. We had gotten about 8 or 10 of these calls when we were having dinner one night with a research gynecologist who's been kind of fascinated with us. He was chief of staff of the hospital here, still is a co-author of our book. He just donates all his time because he's so fascinated. We happened to mention these stories to him about women with increased orgasms and decreased pain. And he said, that's so important, as Belinda mentioned. And we did 2 studies on this, mostly what they do in medicine for intercourse pain. And I'm going to get back to the desire just real quickly, is they'll give desensitizing agents so you can't feel anything, he tells us, or pain relievers, or they'll send you to psychological counseling. Mm-hmm. And that's what's available. So right. We did some studies under his direction and with some NIH biostatisticians and found that we increased the sexual function is divided into 6 domains, and desire, mm-hmm. arousal, lubrication, orgasm, satisfaction, and pain. And we improved in every single one of those. We were shocked, and so was the American Society of Reproductive Medicine. They had me do an oral presentation to them, and as Belinda had mentioned, the decrease of pain was in about 95% of the participants in these published studies, and the desire, I think what happens with desire, I don't know what you think, Belinda, is that these adhesions form on the front of the vaginal wall in the area mm-hmm. around the G-spot, and they act like a blanket, desensitizing the area, mm-hmm. so you just don't feel the pleasure. You don't feel what you would have felt before those formed when you were 14 or 15 or whenever before. That's what I think is going on. But,
mm-hmm. And how effective is it in terms of helping with libido when you've done the studies, Larry?
Let me pull the notes up. Okay. Child pain, life, birth rate, successful. I'll have to hang on. Second, success rates. It has been, here we go, sexual function improved, 78% had greater or renewed libido.
Okay.
And that was infertility and sterility.
Okay. So one of the things that I want to point out here to the listeners is that there are many situations in which there are things that go on in the pelvis, but there are also many situations in which it has to do with our relationships. It has to do with our, you know, self-esteem. It has to do with, you know, our breathing techniques. It has to do with our inability to let go. So there's many, many dimensions to, you know, lack of libido. But this is one of the ones that actually is related to pelvic issues that have to do with chronic inflammatory things like endometriosis or bowel issues, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And I think it's really important to know that now at least people have choices, because so often, you know, certainly in my practice, many, many people that have a history of endometriosis, they're not sexually active because it's too painful, especially, you know, around the rectal area. It's so painful. Because it's a very hard area if people have surgery to get rid of the endo there. So it's really nice to know that there's an option for people, because otherwise we just are recommending, you know, continued surgery or something like that to really help, which doesn't always work that well.
One other thought that I had that we see that very significantly can contribute to pain with intercourse is an actual trauma, a fall onto the buttocks, a fall onto the
right.
tailbone, car accidents, you know, the pelvic floor muscles go into spasm trying to stabilize the body as it's being tossed around. And that's a very common cause that we see very frequently in our women with pain with intercourse.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's also important to kind of point out to the listeners as well that the body is an amazing, amazing thing, but there are things that get it off balance. You know, certainly being in a car accident, having trauma to the neck can cause problems with a car accident as well. And the body's always then having to adapt. And one of the things I talk so often about is the adrenal glands, which sit on top of our kidneys, which is our body's fight-flight response. And if it's always struggling to stay well, well and stay healthy, it makes it much, much more difficult when the body's not in alignment. And I think what you're saying is that it's another thing. Adhesions cause the alignment to be off and cause it to be constricted, and the tissue's no longer elastic. It's much more, kind of static in time. So this whole concept of using something like physical therapy is just so incredibly exciting to me because it works. You know, when I've seen people come back, it really makes a big difference. And especially for those people that have had radiation or had chemo or radiation, and now their cancer is gone, but then they're left with, I have a couple of patients that have this chronic pelvic pain because of, they just feel like they've got a football in their pelvis, because of the amount of radiation that's there and the tissue just no longer is pliable. The good news is the cancer's gone and, many times they're very young, but the bad news is that they're kind of now left with a chronic problem. And generally, in the conventional world, there's not a lot we can do with that. But what I hear you saying is there's a lot we can do.
Yeah, definitely. Also, whenever someone falls or is in a car accident, the as well as the pelvic floor muscles go in spasm, the solid organs, that they have weight, so they reverberate inside the body, and their mobility gets restricted, like the kidneys, the liver, and the spleen. And as we breathe, the kidneys normally have a slight ability to move up and down using the psoas muscle, a deep trunk and back muscle like a rail. And if the kidney mobility is restricted, it can cause pain into the hip, into the pelvis, all the way down into the knee, as well as in the back.
Mm-hmm. Well, we actually have somebody who has a question, and I'm not going to take you right now, Susan, because I want to make sure we have plenty of time for you. So please stay on the line, and what we'll do is we'll come back after the break and answer your question that you have about a knee, because I think we can probably help you. So what you're basically saying, and I think for all of us, it's really important to know that at some point, it really would be good for all of us to do some kind of body work. And I'm not really talking about exercise here. I think exercise is really important because I talk about that all the time, and doing aerobics and doing types of weight training. And we've had speakers and people on with me talking about different kinds of aerobic exercise. But I'm really talking about body work now, either integrative manipulative therapy or something like what Belinda and Larry are talking about, is to really help the tissue come back into balance and to become more stable on many fronts. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We addressed the pelvis as the foundation for the rest of the spine. And if the pelvis is, one side is locked up and it's out of alignment, or if the sacrum or the tailbone are locked up, it can cause pain. As well as in the back or the hip or the pelvis, it can cause knee problems, ankle problems. So we really work at getting people structurally balanced so their legs are even, and, their pelvis and sacrum and the rest of their spine are as mobile and symmetrical as possible.
Now,
then when they do exercises, they get better.
Of course. Because you're structurally aligning the body a little bit better. Let's get back to this whole question. What we talked about a little bit before is this whole notion of bowel obstruction. I think it's important. I don't certainly see it a lot in my office, but when I see people having problems with all kinds of, in particular, I have a patient who had many surgeries for Crohn's disease, and then she had bowel obstructions. What we generally find is those people then are ending up in the emergency room because they've got pretty significant problems with their bowels. Tell me a little bit about how this works for that.
Okay, just pointing to me. What happened was we were treating people for women for blocked fallopian tubes and such like that, had published some studies on that, including opening hydrous helpings and those ladies becoming pregnant as well. And we got a call about 4 years ago from this rock and roll star out west, and she says, well, if you can open blocked fallopian tubes, how about bowel obstructions? And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, I've had six surgeries for bowel obstructions. Each time they cut some out, each time I have to go back for another surgery.
Sure.
The surgeries are getting closer and closer. My last one was 12 weeks ago, and now they're ready to schedule my seventh surgery. Mm-hmm. Can you help me, please? They're killing me.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, well, we don't know, but they're certainly a lot larger than fallopian tubes. It seems reasonable to think that we could help. She arrives having lost 18 pounds and eating only liquids on a Monday. Our treatment program is 5 days. by Wednesday, we went out and had a salmon dinner with her with baked potatoes. She gained back all of her weight, and she avoided the surgery. And since that time, we have come to realize that bowel obstruction, we're not talking about occasional constipation. We're talking about when you've had surgery and adhesions block your small intestines, it's a life-threatening situation. And what medical science does is they hospitalize you. They put an NG tube in your stomach from your nose to take the pressure off. They see if it'll clear. If it won't clear, they have no choice to save your life to cut you open and take out the part that's become adhered, reattach the parts that are left, hope that nothing spilled out so you don't get an infection from that. And that seems to happen too often in bowel obstruction surgeries. Then they discharge you. The problem is that abdominal surgery is the main cause of bowel obstruction.
Right.
So like this rock and roll singer, it's frequently the case, probably more frequent than not, that then 2 years later you have to go for another one, then a year and a half.
So what you're saying is it's very successful, which is really exciting. So let's go, and we have a caller, Todd, who has a question, who had surgery and thinks that he may have intestinal issues. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
So what can we do to help?
So when I was a child, I had a hernia, and they went in for surgery, and I actually don't have a belly button or anything like that. And then when I was 25, I'm 43 right now, just to let you know, but when I was 25, I had my appendix out as well, and they said there was a lot of scar tissue and stuff like that down there.
Right, right.
And what's currently going on is that basically, my stool is kind of smelling like rusty pipes. I think there's blood in the stool, and I think it has all to do with all the scar tissue that's built up, and just curious what and I really don't want to go in for surgery. I mean, I wouldn't mind doing a colonoscopy, but I don't want to go in for surgery, so I'm thinking what's the best solution for that?
Well, blood in the stool is a big deal. And you need to really get to the bottom of that. You do need to have somebody evaluate that, because that can be a medical emergency. It can be simply something as simple as a small hemorrhoid, you know, at the anus. But if you're having blood in your stool, you absolutely, Todd, need to get it evaluated. And indeed, they may want to do a colonoscopy. In terms of, you know, what surgery does is there's a number of things that I think about, because not only do we have to think about this notion of adhesions that we'll have Larry and Belinda kind of address, but we're also talking about the fact that when you have anesthesia and then you have antibiotics, and it also changes the flora of the intestines. So we've got a physical issue in terms of structure, and then we also have another issue in terms of, do you have enough intestinal basically bacteria. Our gut has about 4 to 5 pounds of bacteria in it. And if we have a discrepancy between the friendly bacteria and the unfriendly bacteria, it can cause all kinds of problems in the gut. You put that together with adhesions, and you have an intestinal system that's not working properly. And when we poop, we have approximately 2/3 of our stool is actually bacteria, and some of that is still alive. So these, you know, friendly bacteria are incredibly important for our health and well-being. And a lot of times, unfortunately, it's not addressed. And that may be something that you're going to have to look at as well, Todd, in addition to this issue, because I suspect that you probably have some pretty significant adhesions. So I'm going to ask Belinda to kind of come on now and talk with Todd to say, you know, what does he do? I mean, how does he find somebody in Phoenix, Arizona that might do this kind of work with him after he has a colonoscopy?
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with you about the colonoscopy and also getting on some good probiotics. The powders are really good because your body's able to assimilate them and get your gut as healthy as it can be from the inside. And the adhesions can, after all of your surgeries, you know, we see a lot of people who have bowel adhesions years after they've had appendectomy, after they've had hernia repairs, all sorts of open surgeries. They can actually start to crimp off or strangulate different parts of the bowel, sort of like when you crimp a hose, so the stool can't get through as easily. And if you're straining, you definitely could have hemorrhoids. As far as finding a therapist, you know, that does some deep tissue work, that has a lot of experience working with people who have had bowel issues, would be, you know, very, very important. You know, we don't have a therapist in that area, but we do have clinics as well as our home office here in Northern Florida. We have one in Southern California and one in Northern Virginia, south of Washington, D.C. But I would definitely look for a physical therapist that does a lot of deep tissue, soft tissue work, and, you know, find out if they've had experience treating people with bowel issues.
Does this make sense to you, Todd?
Yep, definitely. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So I would also try and find somebody who also is a functional medicine doc, Todd. And I would go to the Institute of Functional Medicine and say, find a practitioner and find somebody that can be what I call functionally oriented, which means we don't want to just want a diagnosis. We really need just to understand what's the etiology of the problem and what do we need to do, but, you know, way upstream to help heal it. So, okay, we know we've got adhesions. We know the flora is probably imbalanced. To what degree, and what degree do you have an overgrowth of bacteria that you shouldn't have? Do you possibly even have a parasite? Because all of us do at times in our lives, especially if we have an imbalanced flora. And all of those things, in addition to working with someone that does, you know, deep muscle work is important as well. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Good luck.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. So let's go to Dana. Dana has a question. She was in an accident. I don't quite know the rest of the question. So Dana, hi, how are you?
I'm not so great, actually, to be honest.
Okay, so tell us.
One of the things that I've experienced after the accident, which I didn't mention to the person who picked up the phone.
Well, we don't know anything that happened, Dana, so you need to tell us everything that's going on that you need help with.
It's incontinence issues, bowel and bladder. I don't understand, and I have a lot of problems with it. I don't understand why the doctors have not been very
supportive,
helpful in terms of trying to figure out how to resolve it.
Well, similar
and thinking
to,
clearly and focusing, obviously. But.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, like Marcel mentioned with the previous caller, it'd be important to make sure that your gut is functioning as good as well as possible, you know, taking a good probiotic. But it sounds like you probably have some spasm of the bladder or the pelvic floor muscles. The pelvic floor muscles are sort of like a sling, and the bladder, the uterus, and the rectum all sit on top of it. And, you know, gravity pushes down on us and all of our organs all day long. So the pelvic floor muscles need to be balanced and to not be in spasm so they can support the weight of those organs. And what happens when you have an accident, the pelvic floor muscles, more on one side than the other, tend to go into spasm, and it makes it more difficult to control incontinence of, you know, the bowel or the bladder. So you would need to see a good a physical therapist who is knowledgeable and experienced in treating pelvic floor dysfunction. You probably would need some internal work vaginally and rectally, and then to work with a therapist that does biofeedback to help retrain those muscles to be strong. They're aerobic muscles, so they need to be strong enough to support the weight of those organs all day long.
Now, Dana, when you have incontinence, is it when you cough and sneeze, or is it when you are just walking and you have incredible urge to pee and you can't wait to get to the bathroom?
The second one.
Okay, so you have urge incontinence. As soon as you feel like you have to urinate, then you've really got to get to the bathroom, and if you can't get there, you're in trouble.
Right, and sometimes I don't even know. I mean, I've had it happen when I'm standing up at a store, and all of a sudden I realize, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, Right. I would probably recommend that if you're not working with someone that's a urological specialist, mm-hmm. they have people that are, you know, trained in working with urge incontinence, and they now have a new device that they use. It's actually like a pacemaker. And what they do is they actually implant it, and what it does is it stimulates the brain to stop that urge, and it is incredibly effective. I have several patients that have had it done for urge incontinence, but you need to be working with a specialist that really understands the concept of urge incontinence, because it's very different than stress incontinence. Stress incontinence means that when you jump, or when you laugh, when you cry, when you giggle, that you oftentimes will trickle a little urine. Urge incontinence oftentimes is the situation in which people literally from 1 second to the next, they didn't know they had to go pee. And then all of a sudden it's like, if I don't make it to the bathroom, I'm going to urinate my pants. And oh my God, I have. And it can sometimes be painful.
Sometimes I don't even have the sensation that I need to go. And it's, I just have an accident in the bed or whatever.
Right. So my recommendation to you is that you go see a urological specialist that is very familiar with all types of incontinence. They actually will do some testing, and they'll do kind of markers to see how severe the problem is, and they'll talk with you about recommendations for you, okay?
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye, Dana. So, you know, she had a great question that I see oftentimes in my office is many, many women, especially after they've had children, have difficulty with either stress incontinence or urge incontinence. So she asked a great question.
Yeah.
But what I also know is that people that have oftentimes the kind of the lazy bladder or the bladder that's fallen, I oftentimes recommend that they have pelvic physical therapy. What are your thoughts about that, Belinda?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. During childbirth, the pelvic floor muscles get stretched a lot. And, again, they have to be retrained to have adequate strength so urine doesn't leak when they sneeze or cough or jump. Mm-hmm. And same thing with urge incontinence. They definitely should work with a therapist who is familiar and experienced doing pelvic floor physical therapy and biofeedback and addressing any pelvic floor muscle imbalances that may exist.
Right.
You know, especially if they've gotten torn also during delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to have vaginal adhesions from the tear and whether it's stitched or not.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. The other place that I find that pelvic physical therapy is really helpful is people that have something called interstitial cystitis.
Right.
In which they have incredible pain in the bladder. And not only do they have trouble perhaps with urge incontinence, so they're feeling like they have to pee, but if they don't get to the bathroom, they're in so much pain and discomfort that I find that if the pelvis is really kind of mobilized using a form of physical therapy, the pain decreases greatly.
Right. Yeah. We do see a lot of people with IC as well.
Yeah. And the treatment generally medically is not very successful. I mean, we've tried many different things that have been helpful, we thought, but I see it so often not successful for people.
Yeah. You know, there are some dietary changes that they can make. Having a low oxalate diet, certain foods and beverages out. That irritates.
And oftentimes these people also have systemic yeast. And if I get yeast out of their diet and I treat the yeast, they oftentimes feel much relief as well.
Yeah.
But again, I find that the physical therapy pelvically can be incredibly helpful too.
Yeah.
Because it makes a big difference. Yeah. Okay. So there's, what about kind of how people can find someone like this? How do they go about even beginning to find somebody? You said you have a clinic outside of Washington. You have one also in Florida and in California.
Right.
So how would they find, if they're not close to those places, how would they find someone?
And we have one in Indianapolis. We can, most physical therapists are busy training people and saying doing 10 reps and 10 of this and 10 of that and 10 of that.
Right.
But in most cities, there is a physical therapist who does manual physical therapy. So you need to you can ask other physical therapists or your physician, is there anybody that does hands-on work, that does manual physical therapy?
Right.
It complements chiropractic, but it's addresses sort of the soft tissue adhesions that pull bones out of alignment, as you were referring to earlier.
Right.
So that's one way to do it.
Okay.
If people want to have a discussion and they're curious about what's going on, they can certainly come to our website, fill out a medical history questionnaire. We'll be glad to consult with them for about a half hour. There's no charge for any of that. So
what is the website?
It's clearpassage.com.
Awesome. Okay, so everybody out there, you heard that. If you feel like you're wanting to get a little bit more information, you can go to clearpassage.com and ask them some questions. So I guess what I want to do quickly is, we have about a minute left, is to talk kind of the notion that our body sometimes needs a little bit extra help. And the wonderful thing is that by using something similar to manipulative therapy, you can actually decrease adhesions, you can decrease pain, you can decrease, you know, discomfort, and even increase libido, which is just so exciting for women to hear, especially if they've had a history of radiation or any kind of, you know, pelvic adhesions or discomfort in the pelvis. So I just think that's wonderful. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And so for those of you that might be interested, you can go to their website, and you can always stay tuned to my radio show that I do every week, and we'll further talk about that in the future. All right. So in the meantime, have a wonderful week, everyone, and be well, and we will talk with you again next week.